Trusting God, we're in 2 Samuel 19. We didn't finish last week. You know, I was thinking about it this week. It seemed like particularly it just really hit me that as I'm in process of trying to study and trying to spend some time and trying to figure out what it is that oftentimes I found myself this week, as often is the case, you know, somewhat overwhelmed and consumed. Is God, what do you want to teach us? What do you want to teach us? How, you know, what is the pertinent relative lesson for the scripture? And there's a side of me that I feel needs to apologize to you guys for that. I think that there's truth in being a teacher, and I think sometimes that would be God's heart and what God wants to lay on our heart. But the truth is that, you know, David said it. He said, your word I have hidden my heart that I might not sin against you. And there's a side of it that who the heck do I think I am that I want to come up with a practical application for us out of the Bible, you know? God's written his word. God's given us his word. He's given us the Old Testament. Our responsibility and my responsibility is to help put that into our heart as he spoke it, as he said it, as the stories are. And let the Spirit of God transform and use it in our hearts. You know, we're so immediate gratification, you know. We're so impatient with, well, God, what are you saying? And I think it's one of the reasons why we tend to be so New Testament oriented. You know, if we go to James, you know, there's a side of it that what a radical distinction from Samuel, even though it's not, it's the same God. And James says, do this and don't do that, and do this and don't do that, and do this and don't do that. And we're going, okay, good, I like that. I like being told, just tell me what to do here. And we don't ever forget, you know, made most of, all that much of the book to be about him and about his character and about his nature. And it's not that God doesn't have commandments for us. You say, yeah, but we're not under the law anymore. The Testament's full of them too. And I would suggest that for the Spirit of God through a James or through a Paul or through a John or whatever, write something like this and don't do that. That's not a suggestion. That's a command too. And obedience is there. But I also would, I think sometimes we want to be careful, and I would say that I need to be careful to see a great need to move beyond what God in the stories that we put in our hearts, that foundation of who God is, even if we're perplexed and don't understand it, and what did I get out of that, and what did that mean? God says it will mean something. God says that this will show you my character and nature, how I work in people, how rebellion ends up with this. It will shape and form, create a foundation so that when in James he says, do this and don't do that, we go, I trust you. I believe in you. So, that's the process that we're in through 1 Samuel is really just share this story. And I hope that for the rest of our lives, all of us look back as we read or hear about David or read Psalms or read, you know, that we have a foundation that makes it rich, you know, that David becomes like an old friend, you know, that we look back and the more time we do, that's how it's supposed to be. I mean, it's supposed to shape and form us that way. A lot of the Psalms, I was looking back through yesterday, kind of getting that timeline of when Psalms were written and by who, and of the ones that David wrote, man, I didn't count them. I found about it this morning, but I didn't count them. But there's a whole bunch of them, Psalms written all throughout. It's not necessarily sequential in the numbers the way they were put there. But there's Psalms written about when David was fleeing Absalom, you know, when David was fleeing Saul, when David was, you know, in the Psalms, we all look and go, oh, go to the Psalms for inspiration, right? And we all go, yeah, let's read the Psalms because it'll make you happy, you know, when things are looking bad or something. David wrote a good part of his Psalms when he was getting his fanny kicked and getting chased around and things were ugly. Which is true of all of us, you know. And this part of 2 Samuel that we're going to read, go through today, you know, here's David. he just had, God just delivered him and his family and his kingship from a full-on civil war, rebellion of Absalom. And you're thinking, you know, couldn't have been much worse. It's time for a reprieve. We all think that, right? You know, I mean, I deserve a little time off, right? I mean, I deserve a date night. Oh, pardon me. That's not all bad. So, but I'm just, you know, it's, we all think we deserve a vacation. We all think we deserve time off. We all think we deserve a little reprieve. You know, the issue, and I'm not saying we don't deserve it, but we need to trust God to give it to us when we need it, how we need it, what it looks like on doing it. And that's not to say we don't plan it and not to do it. I'm not coming against the current what? A spot ache, yeah, whatever. So I think that it is really important. And, you know, again, the story is something. Here's David coming out of this. I don't think emotionally it could have been worse. Is, you know, he was just on the edge of death, like fleeing literally for his life from his own son, going to kill him. It's one thing to be killed by an enemy, by a Philistine. Here's his own son going to kill him. The whole nation had rallied behind his son and come against him. Almost the whole nation, except for his, you know, closest associates. But for the most part, all the tribes were included in the rebellion. The tribes of Judah, the tribes of Israel, all 12 tribes were included in the rebellion. Tough, tough deal. His son's killed. And God still sticks him with this guy named Job, right? Job's a perplexing guy that I need to, none of us wanted Job in our life, you know. I mean, and there's a side of Job that you look at him and you want to hate the guy for some of the stuff that he does. You know, but on the other hand, he was used by God. He was an incredible patriot and he was used by God to achieve his will because of, I would say, deficiencies in David. I mean, between the two of them, it was David and Job who solidified the nation, Israel, under Solomon and built so that the temple could be built. So they were rich and prospered. And God used Job in spite of Job's, I want to use a word that, something about bad somethingness, but, you know, Job was, he was the real deal. He was a patriot on an extreme level. He cared about the nation of Israel. He cared about David, you know, and God used him to accomplish things that I'm pretty sure, especially that David wouldn't have done. I mean, David did have a soft heart. David did have a forgiving heart. I mean, you look at him, we read last week as he's coming out, and the people are coming to him. You know, we read about Shimei coming before him. Remember that had thrown dust at him and rocks at him. And David's going, okay, I forgive you. And, you know, person after person came before him and I forgive you. You know, here's a civil war that he's trying to write. And he's going, I'm not going to kill anybody here. You know, this whole thing's a mess. And basically took ownership and it's my fault, which is true. And Job looked at it from the perspective of, but we've got a nation to run here. And we've got a purpose of God to protect. You were, you know, Nathan the prophet has given you the prophecy that your kingdom will be enduring forever. And we need to fight for that and protect it. God has called us to do that. And he used Job in all of his just cold hearts, apparently cold heartedness, except I don't know that Job was. I mean, he was just an extreme patriot. I would say in some ways an extreme patriot that God used in spite of his flesh. And I would say that Job suffered because of his flesh too. But God used him. You know, pardon the, there's a lesson here thing, you know. You know, that God, we need to be careful about the people that God puts in our lives. You know, David tries to get Job out of his life here. It doesn't go all that well. So here we are. David had forgiven. He'd forgiven Israel. He tried to get Judah to come back to him and Israel to come back to him. And Things went a bit sideways in that process. Verse 31, let's go there. Mephibosheth came back, remember, and he said just before that, Jonathan's son, and said, hey, you know, my servant lied to you about this. This isn't really what happened. You know, the story's a little hard to understand. David divided it. It looks to me when I was thinking about it, I was thinking, man, where do we hear such a thing? When he said, okay, I'm going to, you know, here's Ziba came and lied to him, okay, his servant, and said that Mephibosheth is rebellious and he, you know, he's rebellious against you. And then, oops, all this, because he was pretty sure that Absalom was going to win, what was going to happen. David gave him the lands, all Mephibosheth's stuff, and said, okay, you've got it all, it's all yours. And then, you know, David was making judgments based on a bad emotional state, I would say, that he was in, and not necessarily led by the Spirit of God. And he gave it to him. Mephibosheth said, hey, it's not true, man. I've been mourning your going away and doing it. And he said, okay, fine. I'll go back to my old agreement and stuff split between you. It's split 50-50. And Mephibosheth said, hey, I don't need anything. All I have is you, and that's all I long for. You know, it reminds me later in life when Solomon, remember Solomon, the wisest of all men, and two women came and they said, this is my baby. And said, no, this is my baby. And said, no, this is my baby. This is my baby, right? And what did Solomon do? He goes, all right, fine. Split it in two. You each give half. Right? And the one woman went, and the mother went, no, she can have it. Right? I'm doing it. And obviously, it exposed the real mother, the one who really cared in the process in doing it. Seems like kind of the same thing, you know, that David did. You know, fine, I'm going to split it in two. He goes, no, don't worry about it. You can have it all. You can have it all. I'm not, don't want to fight for this. And showed, and doesn't really tell us what happened after that, but Mephibosheth was still there in the process. So now Brasiliah, the Gileadite, verse 31. Remember, Brasiliah was Barzillia, something like that. Barzillia was this guy. He was 80 years old. He was a guy in that region that took care of David when he went and fled from Absalom. And we don't know how long they were gone for with this process, but probably weeks, maybe months even. And they were able to kind of stabilize and rally the troops and put things in order. And Brasiliah was a wealthy guy from that area that was a, you know, he wasn't a Jew. He wasn't an Israelite, but he was a proselyte, you might say. He supported David. He was under David's authority, under David's rule. And he brought his wealth and shared of beds, pottery, cooking things, food, sheep, milk, all kinds of things. And they brought it to him and they sustained David while he was there, which was a pretty big deal. The Gilead had come down from Rogalim and he went to the Jordan with the king to escort him over to Jordan. Now Brasiliah was very old, being 80 years old. And he had sustained the king while he stayed in Mahanim, for he was a very great man. And the king said to Brasiliah, you cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me. But Brasiliah said to the king, how long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? My sight, my hearing, my everything is going bad. Or can a servant taste what I eat or what I drink? I mean, or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward? He was a very humble, benevolent guy. Please let your servant return, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. However, here is your servant Shimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what is good in your sight. Josephus, who was a early historian, one of the most respected Jewish historians, wasn't a Christian, but he was a Jewish historian, probably regarded as the most accurate historian written in the Greek. He came up from other writings and outside writings and stuff. He suggests that Shimham was his son. So he was the son of Brasiliah. Let him cross over with the king, do for him what is good in your sight. And the king answered, Shimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight, and whatever you require of me, I will do for you. So, and there's history later showing that there was section close to Jerusalem, a section of land that was actually under his family, Shemham's family. And the people crossed over the Jordan, and the king crossed too, and then the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his place. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Shimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah, and also half the people of Israel accompanied the king. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king, and said to the king, "Why have our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away, and brought the king and his household, and all David's men with him, over to the Jordan?" Then all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, "Because the king is a close relative to us. Why then are you angry about this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense, or has anything been taken for us?" But the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, "We have 10 parts of the king, therefore we have more claim to the king than you. Why then do you treat us with contempt? Was it not our advice first to bring the king back to the king? Wasn't our idea to begin with? I told you so. Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel." I'm not sure exactly the lesson there. But the men of Judah, it's a really tough deal. The men of Judah, which were David's own people, the people, from around the Bethlehem area, and they'd all gone with Absalom. It was kind of the seed of it, right? They were from Hebron, the area of Hebron. And remember, Absalom had gone down to Hebron to start the insurrection and get the people going and brought men with him. So here's David's, the people that had come hard against him, and they were back. This is a really tough thing about forgiveness and doing it. You got this civil war that's just ugly, ugly. And they turned against David. Now they're going, oops. Absalom didn't win here. We were mad at David, and we wanted to take it out on David. David deserved it because David had been acting in ways that were disrespectful to them. Now, a worthless fellow happened to be there, whose name was Sheba, I know. That's what it said, and that's what I was saying in my mind forever. And then I was thinking about it yesterday, thinking, I'm going to read this out loud. Oh, no, that won't sound good. And that's probably not what it is. It's Bishri, I think. Let's say Bishri. Yeah, because the other one, when I was saying it out loud, going, nah. Bishri, let's call it that, okay? Sheba, the son of Bishri, but the men of Judah remained steadfast to their king for the Jordan, from the Jordan even to Jerusalem. Then David came to the house, to his house in Jerusalem. And he took the 10 women, the concubines who had left to keep the house, and placed them under the guard, and provided them with sustenance, but did not go into them. So they were shut up until the day of their death, living as widows. That's a whole nother ball of worms, but he didn't, they hadn't done anything wrong, obviously. But the consequences of David's sin, obviously, the consequences of sin have effects on a lot of people. Then the king said to Amasa, remember Amasa, David, he was one of David's nephews, another one of David's nephews, right? Amasa was, Joab was one of David's nephews. So they both were, but Amasa was the one that Absalom had put in charge of all the army, right? That was originally under Job, and Amasa, his nephew, he had made head over all the army. And he took on that and went against David. So, you have to think about it here. Civil war is ugly, and who do you side with, and what do you do? But David was the Lord's anointed. It was pretty well known. David was the man that God had put into headship. So going against him in rebellion, was really rebellion against God. Okay? So the king said that, said to Amasa, "Call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself." We have to go back and look what had happened, right? In verse 16 back in the other chapter, it said, "Shimei, the son of Gera the Benjamite, who was from Ber, hurried and came down with the men of Judah." So this whole scene happened when everybody was coming to him, right? But there was a rebellion. There was a rebellion that happened. And Sheba had turned to Sheba, Sheba was rebellious to him, right? And Sheba had raised up an insurrection against, he'd taken all the Israelites who were coming over. So here's David coming over, just coming out of the worst, maybe one of the worst times of his life. And he's coming back and thinks he's had enough, just like all of us, and a complete civil war insurrection starts up again. Because of these two guys that were Israel, and they were saying, you know, the worthless fellow came up and verse 20, verse 1, it says, now a worthless fellow happened to be there, whose name was Sheba, the man of Bertri the Benjamite, and he blew the trumpet and said, we have no portion with David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So all the men of Israel withdrew from following David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah remained steadfast to the king from the Jordan. So there was an insurrection or rebellion of the 10 tribes and northern tribes. So this mess is still happening. David thought he would appease the 10 northern tribes by putting a Amasa in place. And it's tough to go back and forth here about what was David right in doing, what was David wrong in doing. I think David was trying to make peace, David was doing, but God had another way. God had another purpose. God was going to deal differently. David had said, I'm going to put Amasa here in charge. I'm sure he was angry at Joab, right? He had a little reason to be angry at Joab, right? Joab had just killed his son. And he told Joab, be careful with my son, protect my son, don't hurt my son when you go into battle. Okay, look out for him. And what Joab done? Did he respect that? No. He stuck a sword in him when he was hanging from a tree by his head. Right? And killed him. And David had to know this. I mean, it's a pretty profound relationship. Remember last week we talked about Joab reproving David seriously for mourning and weeping? That took some boldness. You know. I mean, here's David mourning and weeping over his son who Joab had killed when David told him not to. And Joab comes in and goes, straight up, the insurrection you're going to cause is going to be worse than what you've already known because you need to get a hold of yourself and act like the king here. You know, his nephew was pretty bold, Uncle David, you know, doing it. I mean, it was a pretty strong reproof, and David took it because I think David was humble. Broken and contrite of heart at the time. And David took that admonition and went out and thanked his troops for fighting for him and his family and protecting him and his family. But here's this next rebellion that comes on. David said, okay, I'm going to take Joab, make him step down, take Joab out of it and put Amasa in the place. I mean, can you imagine Joab's feeling about that? Amasa had just led the complete Absalom had been there too as the appointed king, but Amasa had led the troops, man. He was the general that had just led the troops against David. I mean, Joab, being a patriot, being a protector of David and the king, he can't be too happy with this scene, right? But David's mad at Amasa and doing it, David's mad at Joab. So the king said to Amasa, call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself. So Amasa went to call out the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which he had appointed him. Now, there's a whole bunch that happens there, but I'm not, he said in 3 days, so he looks at Amasa and says, you are now the general, okay? Not Joab, you are now the general. So, I want you to go down and rally the troops behind you, be back here in 3 days, because I'm not gonna give this Sheba guy the time that Absalom gave me, right? He was a smart enough warrior knowing, you know, Absalom should have come hard after me like he was advised, and should have come hard after me, and he would have probably had victory over me, right? But I'm not gonna give this to Sheba. I would immediately go after him. I'm not going to give him time to get people rallied against him, get this resurrection built up and get their strength built up and let him get to fortified cities and rally a bunch of people behind him. He obviously rallied a bunch of people. All Israel was there, and here's this Sheba guy that blows a horn and says everybody to their tents, and everybody went, okay, I guess we're following this guy. So he wasn't just kind of out of the blue. He obviously was a man of influence and power on doing it, right? He had him walk away from David when he was crossing the Jordan, right? All 10 tribes and all the people. I don't know how many thousands there were, but a lot. Shimei himself had 1,000 men with him. And how many more there were from the nation of Israel bringing him in? He said, nope, let's go. So David knew this was a deal. Now, it looks to me like this is a massive fail. You know, I mean, a massive failed on this deal. David said, be back in 3 days with the troops. I'm not sure exactly, you know, was that a test to see what kind of loyalty, to see if the troops were going to follow him, to see what was going to happen there, or he just couldn't quite get it together. 3 days seems like a short time to get everybody together. You know, there's a lot of things that potentially could be implied, but he didn't get it done. As a result of that, okay, see, he delayed longer than he appointed him. So David said to Abishai, he didn't say to Joab, right? Because Joab was, he put him down and put Amasa in his place, but he said to Abishai, right? His brother, Joab's brother, who was one of the, now Sheba, the son of Bichri, of Bishri, will do more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him. At least he find for himself fortified cities and escape from our sight. So Joab's men, it's interesting, they call them Joab's men, right? So Joab's men went up after him along with the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men. The Cherethites and the Pelethites were basically two tribes that David had put in position to kind of be his personal bodyguards, okay? And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was the head of the Pelethites and the Cherethites doing it. And all his mighty men, and they went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Okay? So he put Abishai to go after. Remember, Abishai was the guy that said cut Sheba's head off. He made him one of the leaders when they were over there. When Absalom was coming after him, he set him up as one of the generals with Joab. He was Joab's brother. Joab was with him. Take his men. He didn't say anything about Job going, but Job went. When they were at the large stone, which is at Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Now Joab, so Amasa finally got some guys together, said, I'm supposed to be general, I'm supposed to be leading, David put me in this position, I didn't do it, for whatever. I don't know exactly the loyalty, or did people have loyalty, but this is a pretty profound thing. Now Joab was dressed in his military attire, and over it was a belt with a sword in its sheath fastened at the waist, and he went forward, and as he went forward, it fell out. This is implying, I'm not sure how it went, but it definitely diffused the fact that he was coming up to him. And Joab said to Amasa, it is well with you, my brother, asked him a question. And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand and kissed him. Now, in our culture, that probably wouldn't be seen as a nice thing to do, right? Grab somebody by the beard and kiss them. But in that culture, that was actually a common act of respect, okay? And that's what best friends would do. That's what people who are intimate and close would do. You grabbed him by the beard and gave him a kiss. I doubt if he was pulling on it real hard. That typically wouldn't produce one to kiss back thing. But he grabbed him by the beard. I'm sure that it was in some level of gentleness and not hard. But nonetheless, he grabbed him by the beard. Joab grabbed him by the beard with his right hand and kissed him, but Amasa was not on guard against the sword which is in Job's hand, so he struck him in the belly with it and poured out his inward parts on the ground and did not strike him again, like he opened his belly up and he died. Then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Job was a leader. And the troops, look what happens, okay? The king disappointed, everybody heard, everybody knew the king appointed Amasa as the new general, right? And made Job step down. When he sent to pursue, he sent Abishai as the head of the troops to go. She said, take Joab's men, right? Take Joab's men. I'm not putting Joab in charge of you, but you take his men and you go get this guy Sheba doing it. But Job went along anyway, and Job's going, yeah, baloney, you know? I'm sure Job goes, I just fought against this Amasa. My guys died against Amasa. This guy was leading the troops that were in the insurrection and came against him. He obviously didn't have the loyalty of all the people because he couldn't get back there in 3 days with enough troops to go fight. Or he was not responsible enough to do it. This is the guy that's a matter-of-fact general in doing it. And this guy wasn't going to get it done, and he wasn't going to lead the troops good. So he killed him. He killed him right there. I mean, pretty treacherously, brutally killed him. He'd done the same thing earlier, you know, to the other general, to Abner. You know, had lured him in as a friend and let's talk, and David put him and killed him, you know. You know, again, we look at people like this and we say, you know, was this a man led by the Spirit of God? No, but this was a man used by God. You know, and we're going to have those in our lives, man. People that look, oh my gosh, I don't want this guy. I mean, David had to be, I don't quite understand the relationship, except that David wasn't like a timid guy who was scared as much doing it, you know. And David had a bunch of mighty men that were, you know, whether it was still the 600, and then you have the Cherethites and the Pelethites, led by Benaiah, who was a very loyal, faithful leader and serious warrior. I mean, these were the baddest of the bad dudes, man. These were the, you know, he had SEAL Team 6 on his side. He could have taken Joab out, but he didn't. You know, he somehow realized that God was going to use the joint efforts of Joab and David in spite of him hating Joab, right? I mean, he couldn't have liked Joab. He killed his son, murdered his son, murdered his friend, went against his commands time and time again. But you know what? The people followed. He was an amazing leader. So he'd killed him, Joab and Abishai. Now there stood by him one of Joab's young men and said, whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab. Okay? I mean, wait, they just sent us under the leadership of Abishai and Amasa. And Joab just killed who the king put in an insurrection. You think guys have been going, oh man, what do we do now? You know, these are guys that came with Amasa. These are guys that were, you know, with Abishai. And somebody calls out, all right, somebody want to be next, Kana? You know, I mean, I don't know. He didn't say that, you know, but it's like, what are you going to do now, boys? You know, because let's go. But it tells you a lot about they respected Joab to lead him. They respected him as a general. But Amasa lay wallowing in his blood. He probably wasn't dead. You know, I read some stuff. I mean, you could potentially stay an hour. His guts were spilled out. It says his intestines were laying on the ground. He was laying in a pool of blood in the middle of the road, in the middle of the trail. Writhing in pain, I'm sure. And he said he didn't stab him again. I'm not sure what the implication is, but the potential implication is that he let him suffer. He didn't, you know, he wasn't going to make it. His bowels were, he was bowled. They were laying on the ground doing it, but, and he was bleeding to death and slowly dying and breathing in agony. And Joab left him there. You know, he's incapacitated, can't do anything, left him there in the road, and people were pretty, oh my gosh, you know, here's the general, and he was just killed by Joab against God. What do we do? And when he saw, he was laying in the middle of the highway, and when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa from the highway into the field and threw a garment over him when he saw that everyone who came by him stood still. As soon as he was removed from the highway, all the men passed on after Joab, to pursue Sheba, the son of Bishri. They all followed Job. Now he went through all the tribes of Israel, to Abel, even to Beth-Makkah, and all the Berites. And they were gathered together and also went after him. And they were gathered together and also went after him. So he went through Israel and marching with these guys that everybody just followed Sheba, right? All these Israelites, all these elders. And Job's going, all right, boys, here I come. Because where they were, you think about it, was clear down by Jerusalem, where where this city is probably 25 miles north of the north end of the Sea of Galilee. Long ways north there, 100 plus miles, okay, that they tracked him on it. So they were pursuing him through the city, and I'm sure as they walked through the towns going, hey, how about you guys, man? You know, you, and everybody was, I'm staying out of this. You know, I mean, Joab's leading the army again. It's not Amasa that David supposedly put in charge of his. It's Joab, and we'd probably be best not to cross the boy here. So he went marching all the way through. He finally caught up to him in a city that was a fortified city where he finally took refuge up north. He obviously hadn't rallied all Israel with him, hadn't had time to. You know, they'd followed him away from David, but he hadn't had time to rally him together. And they came and besieged him, okay, at Abel Bethmaachah, and they cast up a mound against the city, and it stood by the rampart, and all the people who were with Job were wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall. So they were going to take it down. And get this guy. Then a wise woman called from the city. It's a sweet testament. Oftentimes in the Bible, there's wise women. And that's a good thing. You know, that is something that we should always listen to wise women on doing it. And, you know, it says a lot to me about Joab, because the wise woman called from the city and said, "Hear, hear, please." She was probably a judge, and oftentimes in those days, they were judges. Not often, but Deborah was a judge. There was some judges there. There was a wise woman. She says, "Hear, hear, please tell Joab, come here that I may speak with you." So he approached her. Joab did. And the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "I am." Then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your maidservant." And he said, "I am listening." Spoke and said, "Formerly they used to say, they will surely ask advice at Abel, and thus they will end the dispute." There's an old, in Deuteronomy chapter 20, there's a commandment. It says, you know, give your enemies the option of peace. You know, give them the option. Do you guys want to surrender here or not? Well, they obviously hadn't talked to the people, and she's saying, hey, you know, that's what God said to do. I am of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You are seeking to destroy a city, even a mother of Israel. Why would you swallow up the inheritance of the Lord? Speaks wisdom to him. And, you know, Joab honestly was a hardcore, lay his life down patriot. You know, I mean, he was a Rob Roy, man. I mean, you know, he was a wanting to protect the nation and lay his life down for the nation, willing to do that. So, why would you swallow up the Lord's inheritance? Job said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. I mean, all of a sudden he seems like a nice guy, you know, doing it. Such is not the case. And I think that's true. Such is not the case. He wasn't doing that. It wasn't just about killing or randomly killing. He wasn't afraid to kill. But a man from the hill country of Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bishri by name, has lifted up his hand against King David. Only hand him over, and I will depart from the city. And the woman said to Job, "Behold, his head will be thrown to you over the wall." Go, girl. Then the woman wisely came to all the people, and they cut off the head of Sheba the son of Bishri, and they threw it to Job. So he blew the trumpet, and they were dispersed in the city, each to his tent. Joab returned to the king at Jerusalem. I don't know how that conversation went. Now Joab, but look at this. This tells you, David, I mean, it's a pretty powerful deal. Because this is the same basic order that David had set up earlier. You go back to chapter 8 or something. In 2 Samuel says, Joab was over the whole army of Israel. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and the Pelethites. And Adoram was over the forced labor. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was a recorder. And Sheba was scribe. It's the same guy's name, just a different interpretation than it originally was. And Zodak and Abathar were priests. And Ira the Jerethite was also a priest to David. you know, David took him back and put him over. You know, I don't know quite how that went. You know, David had to deal, I guess, with his bitterness towards him. He murdered his son. He killed his son. I don't know, murder. It was in war. By all rights and by the biblical standard, by the law, by the Deuteronomy, by what had been written, Absalom deserved to die. Should have been put to death. You know, he was a rebellious son. Should have been stoned by the people of the city. He was also rebellious against the king, God's anointed. God allowed him to remain. David tried, it looked like, to get him out of his life, and God allowed him to remain. So here's David back to square one, in a sense, right? He's got Joab as the head of his deal. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, Joab, God used him in a mighty way. God used him to protect the kingdom. God used him to set things up. I mean, God had a purpose, right? That was Solomon. That was God's purpose, was for Solomon to be put in place as king. It wouldn't have happened under Joab. Probably doing it. And God, you know, wouldn't have happened under Absalom, wouldn't have happened under, you know, but God knew and he had a purpose, so he ordered it. And I don't know, you know, I think that often in these stories, I go, wow. You know, sometimes we just need to stand back and go, and who holds the stars in place? You know, who holds the universe in place? And yet he calls me by name. We trust that God knows what's going on. I mean, you think about that. We go, well, God, you know, I need to go talk to this person, but I really don't want to talk to this person. And maybe you're going to leave me in this predicament that I can't handle. And I mean, it's an insane thing. God is holding the stars in place. And he can't handle this little interaction between you and another human being. You know, you can't handle this little interaction between you and, I mean, we get such a small-minded perspective at times. And David had to, I'm sure on some level, when Joab came back, he knew, I'm sure by then the word had gotten back, what he'd done to Amasa, you know, doing it. And David said, this is, and God has so ordained it. God has allowed it to be. You know, the people followed him. It unified under Joab. I mean, Joab could unify him. Amasa couldn't unify him. But Joab, they could. I mean, he was an amazing leader. You can put it that way. You know, I mean, he commanded respect, and men followed him. So, and God used him. So, oftentimes the people that don't look like the people we would chose, or the people we want, or the authority we want in our lives doing it, there's a time where we've got to trust and go, but God, you're a bigger God than this. I mean, Job could have died at any time. I mean, Job was in the middle of battles, man. He was fighting. And there could, I mean, here's all these Cherethites and Pelethites and all David's mighty men. I don't know how many, you know, but there was over 1,000 men that were standing there that were the toughest, baddest dudes anywhere when Joab killed Amasa, who David had put as head of general. Okay? That could have gone really bad. Really easy, right? I mean, there was guys standing there that had killed 600 men by themselves. I'm sure they weren't afraid of Joab and doing it in spite of who he was as a leader. I mean, it could have gone really, really bad, and yet they went, all right, Joab's going to lead and do it. So, story. It's a wild story. I want to let the wild kids out and set up and do lunch, because that's an important thing before it gets too late and too wild. So, I look forward to this. This is a, you know, all of us get pretty selfish with our Sundays, right? Anybody here get selfish with their Sunday afternoons? Yeah. Yeah. So that's my day off. That's my day. It's my time, you know, doing it. That's not the case today, you know. Here we are to pour out to each other to help with all these little wild children running around and serve each other. That's a sweet, sweet, sweet time. You know, this is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it. I look forward to be able to spend, we don't get to spend time corporately and eat dinner that often together, very often at all, and this is a pretty sacred time to do that, so. Let's. God, I thank you that, you know, when oftentimes when I think about it, I mean, you didn't. We could just be floating around by ourselves and not say anything. And the deeper we get into the universe and the cosmos, the more your power, you hold it in your hand. You order the rotation. I mean, this is not chaos. There is just tremendous order. You know, we are rotating around this giant sphere that if we were slightly closer would just burn us up and slightly farther would do it. And yet we continue to rotate around this thing for as long as this earth has been in existence. Because you hold it in your hand. And you set the stars in place and the planets in place to have us go, oh my, what a ridiculous thing that I don't trust God with groceries next week. What a ridiculous thing. But in the process, you do let us, when we think we've had enough, when we think we deserve peace, when we think we deserve to be blessed, another rebellion is there. It's not ours to choose. It's not ours to order. Ours is to be obedient. To be good stewards, there's no doubt. But it's to be obedient. And to try to keep marching, keep doing what you call us to do, in spite of how ugly things may look, in spite of the people you put in our lives. We've all had Joabs in our life that we hate and don't want there, and God uses them to achieve His purpose. Often because of our weakness, often because of our inability in who we are and to keep us humble. I mean, David had to be incredibly humbled by Joab. The nation followed Joab, maybe at this point even stronger than they followed David. David's sin had brought rebellion against him. David's not leading his family correctly had brought rebellion against him. One of the relentless lessons of this, God, is that our sin will have consequences and be destructive for generations. Period. So quit it. So be obedient. So live. You know, it's such a sweet thing to know that living in obedience and surrender to you is where the stars are held in place, man. Is where the world rotates correctly. So we need to start doing it. In spite of collateral damage, it doesn't matter. We do not have to live with guilt and shame and the burden of that. We can live in a right relationship directed and led by you. God, I ask you in the name of Jesus to protect this place the next couple hours as we eat together. I ask you to cause us to understand and grow more deeply in our family relationship. Cause us to get out of our insecure, stupid, selfish little survival boxes. Put them aside and regard others as more important than ourselves. Cause us to love on the kids and the parents and each other. And I thank you that we're blessed with prosperity and food and a warm place to eat it. To your glory, God. Amen.